From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden, and we are going to take you right to the podium in Tampa, where Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, is speaking. And let's listen to him.
Improving the business climate is not only good for small business owners, it's good for people like Sandy and her family. We need more stories like hers in America because the last couple of years have been, well, pretty tough. Like many places across the country, Wisconsin lost more than 100,000 jobs from 2008 to 2010. Unemployment during that time topped out at over 9%. But because of our reforms, Wisconsin has added thousands of new jobs, and our unemployment rate is down from when I first took office. Equally as important, we improved the economic climate for job creators. Today, 94% of our employers believe Wisconsin is headed in the right direction. That compares to just 10% who thought the same thing just 2 years ago. Elections have consequences. As was the case in Wisconsin 2 years ago, too many Americans think our country is headed in the wrong direction. But Mitt Romney understands, like I understand, that people, not governments, create jobs. With that in mind, my administration is making it easier for people to create jobs in Wisconsin. Our reforms put the hardworking taxpayers back in charge, people like Sandy Breath. Sadly, the federal government seems to be going in the opposite direction. Nationally, we've experienced 42 consecutive months of unemployment above 8%. Last month, 44 of the 50 states saw an increase in the unemployment rate. More than 12 million of our fellow citizens are unemployed. We need someone to turn things around in America. That leader is Governor Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney turned businesses around in the private sector. He saved the Winter Olympics, and he balanced state budgets without raising taxes in a way that helped the private sector create more jobs. Then, with the announcement of Paul Ryan as his running mate, Governor Romney not only showed that he has the experience and the skill to become president, he showed he has the courage and the passion to be an exceptional president. With this pick, he showed that the R next to his name doesn't just stand for Republican, it stands for reformer. Now more than ever, we need reformers, leaders who think more about the next generation than just the next election. That's what you get. That's what you get from Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Now, in a few weeks, we will celebrate the 225th anniversary of our federal Constitution. Moments like that remind us that what makes America so great, what makes us exceptional, is that throughout our history, in moments of crisis, be they economic or fiscal, military or spiritual, what makes America amazing has been that there have always been men and women of courage who think more about the future of their children and their grandchildren than they did about their own political careers. Let this be one of those moments. Let this be our time in history so that someday we can tell our children and our grandchildren that we were there, that we changed the course of history for the better. Let us tell them that we helped elect Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan to save America. Thank you.
And that was Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin. He was elected in 2010 during a Tea Party wave. He gained a lot of notoriety early with a controversial budget proposal to curb collective bargaining rights for most public employee unions, but he survived a recall election that came out of that effort. Ron Elving, what did you make of his speech?
Scott Walker is someone who, when he was introduced to give the vote of the Wisconsin delegation earlier today in the roll call vote that nominated Mitt Romney, got the biggest ovation of any state leader and possibly the biggest ovation that anyone has gotten in this hall thus far in the convention day. He is a folk hero to the people of the party all around the country because of his surviving that recall election and because of the particular way in which the Democratic Party nationally, labor unions in particular, came after him in that recall test. So he is a kind of folk hero. I'm not sure that his speech tonight really lived up entirely to the expectation that is created by folk hero status, but he is certainly one of the popular and galvanizing figures just by name here in this convention in Tampa.
Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon, is he someone that is seen with national ambitions here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I thought it was a strong speech. I thought one thing that Walker did that Kasich didn't. When I listened to Kasich's speech, I learned a lot about John Kasich in Ohio, but not so much about Romney until the very end. What I thought Walker did pretty well was he showed how Wisconsin could be a model for national governance. And I think that's a theme that the Republicans should stress in the coming days, is that what these GOP governors, they've been very successful. Now it's time to take it to the whole nation.
All right. Thanks so much, Matt Continetti. We're going to turn now to another crucial state in the upcoming election. Governor Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, joins us now. Hello there, Governor.
Hi. It's great to be with you.
Thank you so much for making time. Is Michigan in play this year?
Absolutely. We should be a strong battleground state because if you look at historically, the Democrats have won the presidency, but in 2010, we came in and swept the ticket from the Republican side, and we've been reinventing Michigan. We're the comeback state in the nation because of all the great things that have been going on over the last year and a half.
Now, though, isn't some of that comeback due to the auto industry bailout championed by President Obama and that Governor Romney opposed?
Well, if you look at the auto bailout, was something that needed to happen in some fashion. There were other ways to do it. I really say it's a historical event that got done. The main question is look at what the companies did to bring themselves back and the people in those companies, the hard work of bringing the auto industry back. And it's not just autos in Michigan. Agriculture is doing well, tourism, a lot of great things are going on to really cause a reinvention, and that's why we're the comeback state.
But I wonder how Governor Romney's opposition to that bailout goes over with the public there. And then it's interesting to note that Paul Ryan, the vice presidential candidate, voted for the bailout.
Well, again, I think too much time is spent on the bailout. It was something that got done. It did work in terms of keeping Chrysler and GM going, which was important. But as a practical matter, Michiganders, and I'm there all the time, and it was the same issue in 2010, is they're interested in listening to someone talk about what's going to be done to create jobs today and tomorrow and create a bright future for our kids. And Romney and Ryan have a strong platform to make that happen, and that's what's really on people's minds.
One last question. In 2010, you ran as a Republican moderate in an election season when a lot of other candidates were going much more conservative. There was a big Tea Party trend. Do you think that the Romney-Ryan ticket has a lot of appeal for moderates, and do you think they expect to see more of a moderate general election campaign coming out of this convention?
Yeah, if you look at it, I didn't run under any label other than Michigander, and that's what I was proud of and on the Republican ticket, and it worked well because what Michiganders really want are just what I said. They want more and better jobs and a future for our kids, and those are the issues that really matter in Michigan, but I believe those are the major issues nationally. There are many other topics out there, but as I said, Michigan's the comeback state. We've improved dramatically, but we still have more work to be done. I'm proud and excited, and I think that's going to resonate well with Romney and Ryan in Michigan.
All right. Governor Rick Snyder from Michigan, thank you so much for your time. And E.J. Dionne there in Tampa. Again, we have an important state in this election, and we're hearing about how great the economy is going.
Right. And I thought it was very interesting. Most Republicans still attack the auto bailout. I noticed that John Kasich didn't even mention the auto bailout, which, if Barack Obama carries both Michigan and Ohio, will play a major role in that happening, because bringing back the auto industry was very important to both states. Kasich did mention it. And Governor Snyder didn't say it was a bad thing. He basically said, well, it was a big, good thing, but wasn't the most important thing, and he tried to move past it. And again, I think those are two states where this contradiction that, as Matt said earlier, Governor McDonnell and Matt and Ron said earlier, Governor McDonnell tried to sort of square that circle by saying, well, it's really states with Republican governors doing well. That doesn't matter at all to Barack Obama as long as things are going well. Just in terms of style, I thought that's where Scott Walker was disappointing. I thought that John Kasich gave a great old-fashioned speech. McDonnell gave a very smooth kind of speech. Walker's speech was not rhetorically powerful. And I think his problem as a national figure is that the very things that make him a folk hero in this hall, particularly his attack on unions and public employee unions in particular, also the aspect of him that makes him a leading figure of intense dislike, to be polite here, in the other base. And I think that could still follow him around if he has national ambitions.
Which is, of course, part of the reason he's a folk hero.
Well, that's right.
Why is that, Ron?
Because he excites such extreme emotion among Democrats, particularly unionist Democrats, and activists really of many different kinds, get a special kind of color about Scott Walker, and they express it quite vociferously. That makes him even more popular within the base of the Republican Party. I thought it was interesting that Rick Snyder said that the auto bailout was, quote, a historic event that got done. That's kind of the positive inverse of mistakes were made. No one seems to really have been responsible for that auto bailout.
Nicely said, Rob.
But it got done.
Well, even though we've been hearing about good economies in swing state after swing state, you know, the bad overall economy is going to be a big issue in this election. But Matt, a Pew Research Center poll recently found that middle-class Americans blame the Bush administration far more for their economic troubles than they do President Obama.
That's right. That's been persistent. People beginning, you know, still, just like in the first Great Depression, when people can persistently blame the Republicans for overseeing that bubble that then burst, people now blame Bush and continue to do so. That's why I think it was very important for Romney to pick someone like Ryan, who has shifted the conversation not necessarily to the from the past to the future. They're talking about the crises that lay ahead and how we're going to address those. Now, those are very polarizing answers about how one does that. But I think it broadens the Romney message and therefore gives it some wider appeal.
All right. I have a brief update now on the other big story that cropped up this week, the heavy weather and Hurricane Isaac, which has delayed this convention for one day. The convention was spared the worst of what is now a Category 1 hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico. Hurricane Isaac has made landfall in southeastern Louisiana. It had winds of 80 miles per hour. It is expected to hit New Orleans directly later this evening, and NPR News will bring you updates on that. We've got a lot of people down there in the region. Ron, I want to talk about some people that are not here. Governor Bobby Jindal of Louisiana had to leave. He was supposed to speak tonight. He had to leave because of the hurricane. Florida Governor Rick Scott had also had to cancel his engagement. But there's some other people that one might expect to be at this event this week that are not. And what does that say?
Well, you might talk a little bit about the last couple of people who have been president, who have been Republicans, both of whom are still alive and both are still named George Bush. They are not here. Also, an iconic figure from the Bush years in both Bush administrations, H.W. Bush and then George W. Bush, his son, that would be Dick Cheney. Richard Cheney has gotten a new heart in a transplant operation, and it is apparently extraordinarily successful as a transplant operation. His health is good and restored, and he sounds and looks better than he has in a long time. But he's not here at this convention. He said he had a long-planned fishing trip in Canada that he couldn't reschedule. So why is he not here?
He scheduled that last year.
why is he not here? Why are the Bushes not here? Because they do want to, as Matt said, transfer the conversation to the future. They don't want to dwell on the Bush year.
Sarah Palin's another big name. We know she lights up a podium, but she is not on the schedule this week.
No, but she is here in Tampa, and she has been around at some events.
Okay. And Matt, you were saying you'd like her to speak this week.
Well, absolutely. You know, again, to get back to those white working class voters, I think they respond very much to Sarah Palin's culturally populist message. And I think she's always risen to whatever occasion. We all recall her initial speech at the RNC in 2008. You know, the Wall Street Journal reported today that there is a TBD, a two or a to-be-announced speaker on Thursday night, and I think there are a lot of Republicans around the country that are secretly hoping it might turn out to be Sarah Palin.
I think there are a lot of Democrats around the country who are also secretly hoping.
That's right. You and me, EJ, we'll both enjoy that speech.
Which is why I don't think it's going to happen. It is striking that both Bushes are missing. In a funny way, I think it's a terrible mistake not to have the elder President Bush, although he's getting a little old. But you know what's striking about his presidency, and I've noticed this among Democrats as well as Republicans, his presidency has risen in esteem considerably since he was defeated in 1992. It's also striking that in many ways, Barack Obama's foreign policy more closely resembles George H.W. Bush's foreign policy than George W. Bush's did. He would be a unifying figure if they had him here, I think.
And speaking of foreign policy, we're not hearing much of that at all tonight.
No, not at all.
We didn't build that. And tonight we're talking about what we built. And we're talking about how the entrepreneurial class of America is what makes America great and why that entrepreneurial class needs to be given freer rein and more, essentially more resources, in other words, through lower taxation on individuals and corporations, to do what it does best in the next few years. They're sticking to their theme, and they're sticking to it with great adherence.
And what a contrast to the last three Republican conventions, and particularly 2000, 2004, when it was all about foreign policy. Obviously, the foreign policy choices made under the second President Bush are not very popular, and the Republicans now know that.
All right. We are going to go back to the floor there, and Brian Naylor is with us. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jennifer. You know, what convention is complete without people in funny-looking costumes and hats and accessories reflecting their home state? And the Republican convention this year, of course, is no different. And I'm in the Kansas delegation with Amanda Adkins, who is also the state chairman from Kansas. Now, Amanda, would you explain a little bit about what you've got going on here?
Sure. Well, we really wanted to showcase the state of Kansas and express our enthusiasm the opening day. So we had a whole lineup, a cast of characters, so to speak, this evening, inclusive of the Wizard of Oz theme. I do have on ruby red slippers and a little dog, and we had a couple of witches. But then we also had our schools represented, KU, K-State, WSU, and we had Wyatt Earp and some others. So we were just having a really great time, and it all tied into what we wanted to say about Mitt Romney, which is our state's focused on leadership and success.
And how does that tie in with the Wizard of Oz?
Well, the quote earlier was that in the state of Kansas, we often say there's no place like home for Barack Obama in Chicago.
So that was the tie. All right. And Toto is there on your knee.
Brian. We need to leave it there. That was fun. It's a reminder that, if nothing else, these conventions are a fun time for the parties. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. From Nissan, featuring the redesigned Nissan Altima with 38 miles per gallon highway. Nissan, innovation that excites. And from the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years. The Principal at dreamagain.com. This is NPR.
Thank you.
And this is special cover. Here is Rick Santorum, former U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania and a former content opponent of
Mitt Romney. So I just want to say to you, John, proud of you, son. Thank you. I am a first-generation American. At the age of 7, my dad came from to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, from the mountains of northern Italy, on a ship named Providence. How providential that one day his son would announce for president just down the road from the deep mines where his father, my grandfather, mined coal till he was 72 years old. When my grandfather died, I remembered as a kid kneeling at his casket and not being able to take my eyes off his thick, strong hands. Hands that dug his path in life and gave his family a chance at living the American dream. Working the mines may not have been the dream he ever dreamed. I never dared to ask him. But I think his answer would have been that America gave him more than he had ever hoped. America believed in him. That's why he believed in America. My grandfather, like millions of other immigrants, didn't come here for some government guarantee of income equality or government benefits to take care of his family. In 1923, there were no government benefits for immigrants except one: freedom. Under President Obama, the dream of freedom and opportunity has become a nightmare of dependency, with almost half of America receiving some sort of government assistance. It's no surprise fewer and fewer Americans are achieving their dreams, and more parents are concerned their children won't realize theirs. President Obama spent 4 years and borrowed $5 trillion trying to convince you that he can make things better for you, to put your trust in him and the government to take care of every problem. The result? Massive debt, anemic growth, and millions more unemployed. The president's plan didn't work for America because that's not how America works. In America, we believe in freedom and the responsibility that comes with it to work hard to make the dream of reaching our God-given potential come true. We believe it because it still works. Even today, graduate from high school, work hard, and get married before you have children, and the chance you will ever be in poverty is just 2%. Yet, if you don't do these three things, you're 38 times more likely to end up in poverty. We understand many Americans don't succeed because the family that should be there to guide them and serve as the first rung on the ladder of success isn't there or is badly broken. The fact is that marriage is disappearing in places where government dependency is the highest. Most single mothers do a heroic work and an amazing job raising their children. But if America is going to succeed, we must stop the assault on marriage and the family in America today. From lowering taxes to reforming social programs, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are dedicated to restoring the home where married moms and dads are pillars of strong communities, raising good citizens in our neighborhoods. A solid education should be the second rung on the ladder to success. But the system is failing. President Obama's solution has been to deny parents choice, attack private schools, and nationalize curriculum and student loans. Mitt Romney believes that parents and the local community must be in charge of our schools, not the Department of Education. Yet we all know there is one key to success that has helped people overcome even the greatest of obstacles: hard work. That's why work was the centerpiece of the bipartisan welfare reform law. Requiring work as a condition for receiving welfare succeeded, and not just because the welfare rolls were cut in half, but because employment went up, poverty went down, and dreams were realized. It's a sturdy ladder of success that is built with healthy families, education, and hard work. But President Obama's policies undermine the traditional family, weaken the education system, and this summer, he showed us once again he believes in government handouts and dependency by waiving the work requirement for welfare. Now, I helped write the welfare reform bill. We made the law crystal clear. No president can waive the work requirement. But as with his refusal to enforce our immigration laws, President Obama rules like he is above the law. Americans, take heed. When a president can simply give a speech or write a memo and change the law to do what the law says he cannot do, we will no longer be a republic.
This is live coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. At the podium now in Tampa is Rick Santorum, former U.S. Senator.
Yet as my family and I crisscrossed America, something became so obvious to us. America is still the greatest country in the world, and with God's help and good leadership, we can restore the American dream. Why? Because I held its hand. I shook the hand of the American dream, and it has a strong grip. I shook the hands of farmers and ranchers who made America the breadbasket of the world, hands weathered and worn and proud of it. I grasped the dirty hands with scars that come from years of labor in the oil and gas fields, mines and mills, hands that power and build America, and are stewards of the abundant resources that God has given us. I've gripped hands that work in restaurants and hotels, hospitals, banks, and grocery stores, hands that serve and care for all of us. I clasped hands of men and women in uniform and their families, hands that sacrifice and risk all to protect and keep us free, and hands that pray for their safe return home. I held hands that are in want, hands looking for the dignity of a good job, hands growing weary of not finding one, but refusing to give up hope. And finally, I cradled the hands, the little broken hands of the disabled, hands that struggle, hands that bring pain, hands that ennoble us, and bring great joy. They came to see us. Oh, did they come to see us when they found out that Karen and I were blessed with caring for someone special too, our Bella. Four and a half years ago, I stood over a hospital isolette, staring at the tiny hands of our newborn daughter, who we hoped was perfectly healthy. But Bella's hands were just a little different, and I knew different wasn't good news. The doctors later told us that Bella was incompatible with life and to prepare to let go. They said even if she did survive, her disabilities would be so severe that Bella would not have a life worth living. We didn't let go. Today, Bella is full of life, and she has made our lives and countless others much more worth living. I thank God that America still has one party that reaches out their hands in love to lift up all of God's children, born and unborn. And we say that each of us has dignity, and all of us have the right to live the American dream. And we also say that without you, America is not keeping faith with its dream that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Ladies and gentlemen, you know we are stewards of a great inheritance. In November, we have a chance to vote for life and liberty, not dependency. A vote for Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan will put our country back in the hands of leaders who understand what America can and, for the sake of our children, must be to keep the dream alive. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was Rick Santorum, the former U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania and Romney's longest standing opponent for the Republican presidential nomination this year. We are joined now by Jeff Brady once again, who is on the floor at the Tampa Bay Times Forum. We're going to switch, actually. We're going to hear from Ted Cruz now. He's a Texas Senate candidate. He's now speaking at the podium.
Good evening. I have the honor of standing before you this evening for one reason. Because thousands and thousands of grassroots activists stood united, not for a candidate, but for the sake of liberty. We are seeing something extraordinary something that has dumbfounded the chattering class. It began in 2010, right here in Florida. In Utah, in Kentucky, and in Pennsylvania. It continued this summer in the state of Indiana, in Nebraska, in Wisconsin, and in the Lone Star State. We are seeing a great awakening, a national movement of we the people, brought together by what unites us, a shared love of liberty and an understanding of the unlimited potential of free men and free women. I want to tell you a love story. It's the story of all of us. It's a love story of freedom. It's the story of our founding fathers who fought and bled for freedom and then crafted the most miraculous political document ever conceived, our Constitution. The framers understood that our rights come not from monarchs, but from God. And that those rights are secure only when government power is restrained. It's the story of the brave Texians in the city of Gonzales, when General Santa Anna demanded that they hand over their guns and the cannon that guarded their city. They responded with the immortal cry, "Come and take it." It's the story of the greatest generation who rose up to confront the grotesque evil that was the Nazis and who ushered in the greatest era of peace and prosperity the world has ever seen. It's the story of civil rights pioneers like Dr. Martin Luther King, who stood up to the scourge of discrimination and bravely championed that each of us must be judged not by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. It's the story of President Ronald Reagan, who turned back the growth of government and restored mourning in America. Who stood up against the oppressive evil of communism and demanded, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall."
And we've been listening to Ted Cruz. He is the former Solicitor General and a Texas Senate candidate running for the open Senate seat left by retiring Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson. Many more speakers coming up. Stay with us. This is live special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News. Thank you. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington, and we're joined now from Tampa by NPR's Jeff Brady. Hi there.
Hi, I'm with the Iowa delegation, actually sitting here with Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. You were governor back from 1983 to 1999.
16 years. I had a 12-year sabbatical, president of a medical school, and I had a lot of people come to me and say, the state of Iowa is going the wrong direction. We're going into debt, and we need to focus on jobs again. And like a lot of Republican candidates in 2010, I ran for governor again and defeated an incumbent Democratic governor that was doing to Iowa what Obama is doing to America.
Well, now, back when in your first round as governor, you worked on welfare reform, specifically the work requirement. Rick Santorum was talking about that a few minutes ago. Why is that issue important to you?
Well, it's one of the biggest accomplishments that happened when we had a Republican Congress and Clinton was the president. Tommy Thompson from Wisconsin, John Engler, and I were among the Republican governors that worked very hard and said, you know, we've got to change welfare as we know it. We need to focus on helping people to get a job and get the training and to get a job. It's been a great success. We've cut the welfare rolls in Iowa in half. I think that's happened in most states. Obama never supported it. He didn't like it in the first place. A lot of liberal Democrats didn't. And now, of course, he's trying to weaken it. And I think that's such a tragedy because it's one of the great accomplishments of moving from an entitlement program to something that really helps people to move up so they can help themselves and get the training and skills and job that they need. And that's the kind of thing we need to do so that people can enjoy the American dream instead of be dependent on government.
Well, you say President Obama is trying to weaken it. Isn't it up to the states to determine if that requirement is relaxed?
Well, actually, first the states had to get waivers to require work. And then we worked to get a national law that said work was required. And now what he's trying to do is take that away. That was part of the welfare reform passed back in the 90s. It tied welfare to work, and it specifically also involved job training. And it's been a very successful program. I think it would be a tragedy to see it weaken. The president made this an issue by the action that he took in July in weakening the work requirement.
And do you see this as a big issue in the campaign?
Yes, I think it's indicative of the difference in philosophy. Republicans have been working to try to bring more private sector business and jobs to their states. Obama has increased the tax and regulatory burden, keeps threatening entrepreneurs, we're going to raise your taxes, and of course, he's basically destroyed the coal industry, and one after another of businesses have been damaged by this excessive regulations, especially the EPA. Just to show you how crazy it is, in my state, under the Rice rules, they require, these rules say that if you have a backup generator that's used just sparingly, that you have to spend millions of dollars to retrofit it. Now, this is only used a matter of a few hours a year, and it's going to drive up the cost for the consumers tremendously. I objected to this. The EPA has finally backed off and said, instead of 15 hours, now we're going to let you do 100. But it's because the other thing you want to do, they wanted to eliminate the opportunity for young kids to do what I did growing up, working on the farm, working at my uncle's farm, working on our neighbor's farm. You can't do these things working with machinery and with livestock. That's where we got the work ethic, and that's really, I think, what builds character. That's the kind of crushing regulations this administration is trying to impose. Now, we've been fighting them, and in state after state where Republicans have been elected governors, we've been reducing both the regulatory and the tax burdens.
All right, that's Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. Thank you so much for chatting with us. Clearly an economic message here tonight, and you heard a lot there from Governor Branstad about it.
All right, NPR's Jeff Brady, thank you so much. Jeff, they're on the floor at the Tampa Bay Times Forum. We are bringing you live coverage. That's the noise you hear in the background, the string of speakers tonight. And somewhere in a little tiny space above that floor is NPR's senior Washington editor Ron Elving and E.J. Dion of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello, Jennifer.
And Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon is here in the studio with me in Washington. Let's jump back a little bit to Rick Santorum. He spoke a few minutes ago. He was the longest standing opponent in the presidential nomination process. He kind of still sounded like an opponent. I didn't hear a lot of talk about Romney there, Matt.
No, not at all. I mean, I think we learned from Rick Santorum that he shook a lot of hands on his campaign. But what I was struck by listening to him was how he's so reminiscent of the Bush years. He really was a George W. Bush conservative. He's a social conservative. He's a values conservative. He is a compassionate conservative. You heard him keep talking about the poor and how he wants to help the poor. And he was also a very strident national security hawk, a believer in the Bush doctrine. And, of course, that resulted in an 18-point loss in 2006. You could easily have charted a path, virtual history is what Niall Ferguson calls it, where it would be Rick Santorum accepting the nomination in 2012. It had, you know, had he been put on the ticket by Bush in 2000, which was often he was on the short list, had he won that Senate race against Bob Casey in 2006, which he lost. It's an interesting, he's kind of, he's at an angle to his party right now, but he could very well represent one of the futures of the party.
All right, E.J. Dionne, a face of the future of the GOP?
I thought that was the most emotionally powerful speech we heard tonight. I thought I agree with Matt that this is not a Romney speech. It looked like, okay, if Romney doesn't make it, I'm going to be here again.
All right, and E.J., I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to introduce the next speaker we have coming up is Arthur Davis. He's a former representative from Alabama. He made news recently when we're expecting him, I guess. He switched his resignation from a Democrat to Republican. He had run for governor of Alabama in 2010 but failed to win the Democratic nomination. He was actually a co-chair of President Obama's 2008 campaign. Here is Arthur Davis.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much for that warm welcome. Thank you so much. Now, some of you may know the last time I spoke at a convention, it turned out I was in the wrong place. So, Tampa, my fellow Republicans, thank you for welcoming me where I belong. Thank you. Thank you. Now, we got to get on with the show. We've got to get on with the show because we have a country to turn around. This very night, you nominated the most experienced executive to seek the presidency in 60 years in Mitt Romney. He has no illusions about what makes America great. He doesn't confuse the presidency with celebrity. Our loftiness with leadership, what a difference 4 years makes. Now, the Democrats' negative ads do convince me that Governor Romney can't sing. But his record convinces me he knows how to lead, and I think you know which skill we need more. Now, America is a land of second chances. And I gather in this close race, you have room for the estimated 6 million of us who got it wrong in 2008 and who want to fix it. Maybe we should have known that night in Denver that things that began with styrofoam, Greek columns, and artificial smoke typically don't end well. Maybe the Hollywood stars and the glamour blinded us a little. You thought it was the glare. Some of us thought it was a halo. But in all seriousness, do you know why so many of us believed? We led with our hearts and our dreams that we could be more inclusive than America had ever been. And no candidate had ever spoken so beautifully. But dreams meet daybreak. The jobless know what I mean. So are the families who wonder how this administration could wreck a recovery for 3 years and counting. so many of those high-flown words have faded. Remember, my friends, the president's saying of negative politics and untrue ads, not this time? Who knew not this time just meant not unless the economy is stuck and we can't run on our record? Remember when the president said of his own election, this was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow and our planet began to heal. Who knew the plain English version of it was, middle America, get ready to shell out $60 to fill up your car. And in terms of their crown jewel legislative achievement, who knew that when asked, could government conceivably impose a federal mandate requiring middle-class Americans to buy health insurance, whether they could afford it or not, that the Obama answer would be, yes, we can. So this time, in the name of 23 million of our children and parents and brothers and sisters who are officially unemployed, underemployed, or who have stopped looking for work, let's put the poetry aside. Let's suspend the hype. Let's come down to earth and start creating jobs again.
You're listening to live coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. We're listening to Arthur Davis, a former representative from Alabama. He had been an Obama, President Obama supporter and has now switched his registration to Republican.
And of course, we know that opportunity lies outside the reach of some of our people. We don't need flowery words about inequality to tell us that. And we don't need a party that has led while poverty and hunger rose to record levels to give us lectures about suffering. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are Americans who are listening to this speech right now who haven't always been with you. And I want you to let me talk just to them for a moment. I know how loaded up our politics is with anger and animosity, but I have to believe we can still make a case over the raised voices. There are Americans watching right now who voted for the president, but they're searching right now because they know that their votes didn't build the country they wanted. To those Democrats and independents whose minds are open to argument, listen closely to the Democratic Party that will gather in Charlotte and ask yourself if you hear your voice in the clamor. Ask yourself if these Democrats still speak for you. When they say we have a duty to grow government even when we cannot afford it, does it sound like compassion to you? Or does it sound like recklessness? When you hear the party that glorified Occupy Wall Street blast success, when you hear them minimize the genius of the men and women who make jobs out of nothing, is that what you teach your children about work? When they tell you America is this unequal place where the powerful trample on the powerless, does that sound like the country your children or your spouse risk their lives for in Iraq or Afghanistan? Do you even recognize the America they are talking about? And what can we say about a house that doesn't honor the pictures on its walls? John Kennedy asked us what we could do for America. This Democratic Party asks, what can government give you? Don't worry about paying the bill. It's on your kids and grandkids. Bill Clinton took on his base and made welfare a thing you had to work for. This current crowd guts the welfare work requirement in the dead of night and won't tell the truth about it. Bill Clinton, Jack Kennedy, and Lyndon Johnson reached across the aisle and said, meet me in the middle, but their party rammed through a health care bill that took over 1/6 of our economy without accepting a single Republican idea, without winning a single vote in either house from a party whose constituents make up half of this country. You know, the Democrats used to have a night when they presented a film of their presidential legends. Folks, if they do it in Charlotte, the theme song should be this year's hit, "Now You're Just Somebody That I Used to Know." My fellow Americans, when great athletes falter, their coaches sometimes whisper to them, "Remember who you are." It's a call to their greatness at a moment when their bodies and spirit are too sapped to remember their strength. This sweet, blessed, God-inspired place called America is a champion that has absorbed some blows. But we bend, we do not break. This is no dark hour. This is no dark hour. This is the dawn before we remember who we are. So may it be said of this time in our history, 2008 to 2011, lesson learned. 2012, mistake corrected. God bless you. God bless you, Tampa. God bless you, America. Let's take this country back. Thank you so much.
And that was Arthur Davis, a former representative from Alabama, former President Obama's supporter. He's now living in Virginia and has switched to a Republican Party.